feet away and grinning at me. A water baby for sure. He's as confident on his surfboard as he is on dry land. He showed me how to paddle out through the breakers, how to balance my body, trusting the buoyancy of the board to keep me afloat without fighting it, how to cut through the top of a cresting wave by throwing all my weight forward onto my chest. He even showed me how to leap onto my feet in one swift motion so I could try to catch a wave, but I ended up nosediving into the water every time, so we took a break from that. Now we're out past the takeoff zone, floating peacefully. I'm learning the rhythm of the ocean, its sets and lulls, the restless motion of it beneath me, vast and beautiful and dangerous. I could be riding the back of an enormous dragon, gliding through the air. "How long have you been doing this?" I ask. He shrugs. "Ever since I moved here. I've been obsessed with the ocean since the first time I saw it. Topeka, Kansas is about as far away from any ocean as you can get."
"Homegrown in a flyover state, hmm?"
He cuts a sharp gaze to me.
"Are you serious? I can't believe you haven't Googled me. We've been eye-fucking each other for 2 years.
"A year and a half." He grins.
"I know it's a year and a half. I just wanted to see if you did."
I smile mysteriously. That was a lucky guess, actually. I have no idea when we first met. I just didn't want you to feel bad that I've never bothered to Google you. He splashes me with water. I scream, because for whatever bizarre biological reason, that's what girls do when boys splash us with water, and then laugh. I splash him back. Then we're in a water fight, dousing each other with big handfuls of cold salt water, kicking it at each other, laughing like mad, playing like a couple of schoolyard kids on recess. It's then that I spot the fin. Dark and triangular, it's about 50 feet away from us on my side, cutting through the surface of the water as easily as a knife cuts through butter. It's moving fast in our direction. This time when I scream, it's for real.
"Shark, shark, 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 shark!"
I whip my legs out of the water. That causes me to lose my balance, which then causes me to topple over sideways into the shark-infested ocean. I come up kicking and screaming, panicked, gasping for air. Salt water stings my eyes. Inhaling a mouthful of water, I cough, my arms flailing for safety of the board. Brody's calling to me. I can't make out what he's saying. I'm shrieking and splashing too loudly, but when I manage to drag myself halfway onto the surfboard, I can finally hear him. And the bastard is laughing. Laughing. "It's only a dolphin, Grace. Look." A pale gray body whips past us in the water not 10 feet away. Then, like a rocket, it blasts through the surface and flies glinting into the air. It hangs there for a moment, sleek and shining, raining drops, and then angles down and slices back into the ocean, leaving barely a splash in its wake.
"Here's another one," shouts Brody, pointing behind me.
Breathless, my heart hammering, I spot another fin headed toward us. There are 4 more behind it, flared out in a V formation. They fly past us and then break the surface as the first one did and leap high into the air. My mouth drops open. A circus act couldn't be more perfectly timed.
"They're playing."
Brody slides off his board and paddles the few feet that separate us. He hangs onto the edges of both of our boards, making us a little flotilla. His smile is brighter than the sun as he faces me, bobbing in the water only a foot away.
"They're playing with us."
I can't speak because I'm still too traumatized by the thought that I was about to become a tasty hors d'oeuvre for a great white. 6 more dolphins speed past, jumping and blowing, splashing and jostling, having as much fun as a bunch of unleashed dogs in a doggy park. Curious, they circle back and fly past us again, And I swear, as each one surfaces from the water, they look at us with their merry little eyes like, "Hey there, ungainly land creature. You sure are strange-looking, but you're welcome here." When they finally go, disappearing into the deep blue without a trace as quickly as they came, the ache in my chest tells me I've witnessed something special. Something sacred. Brody sees how moved I am. He swims closer and plants a wet, salty kiss on my cheek.
"Yeah,"
he says, his voice husky.
"There are still miracles in the world, Grace. You just have to know where to find them."
As we float in the water, smiling into each other's eyes, I can't help but wonder if fate is finally extending me a long overdue olive branch. Or setting me up for a soul-shattering fall. Side by side, our surfboards under our arms, we trudge silently up the beach through the sun-warmed white sand to the path that leads to the lawn. The path eventually meets up with the stone walkway that takes us through Brody's yard to the large patio shaded by swaying palm trees, their stiff fronds glinting in the light. I'm physically exhausted, but feel high, buzzed, as if I've been drinking, but my mind is sharp. Everything around me is crystalline sharp, painfully bright, saturated with brilliant color. Every crack on the pavers beneath my feet seems made by design. Every drop of water falling from my hair is a tiny perfect reminder of one of the most wonderful mornings of my life. Something powerful and mysterious is moving in me. A kind of seismic shift is taking place, and it's all because of the man walking in quiet contemplation by my side. I don't want to examine too closely what's happening. For now, it's enough to just feel. And God, do I. Everything from awe to terror to glee, along with a strange sort of friction, like my skin has grown too tight. Like at any moment I might crack open the shell of my body, shed it like a cocoon, and take flight in a riotous burst of color. I wonder if he's feeling this too. This change, this electricity. All my senses crackle with the anticipation of what will happen when we get back to the house. It doesn't help that I'm naked under my wetsuit, and I know he is, too.
"We can rinse off over there, get the sand off our feet before we go inside."
Brody points to an outdoor shower on the side of the house. It's open on three sides, with a smooth bed of stones underfoot and a removable showerhead above. He leans his board against the side of the house. He takes mine from me and does the same, standing them so close together they're touching. I know I'm a fool, but it feels symbolic. Purposeful.
"They're making out,"
jokes Brody, seeing where my gaze lingers. "Must be awkward, making out with no lips." I joke back, hoping he'll attribute the color in my cheeks to our time spent in the sun. He flashes me a smile.
"There are all kinds of ways to make out."
My stomach flips. I can't wait for him to show me what that means. He turns the shower on for me. I rinse off my feet first, then rinse the salt water from my hair and face. I am aware of his gaze on me the entire time. Warmer than sunlight. When I'm finished, he quickly rinses off too, shaking his head under the spray like a dog. Then he turns off the spigot, reaches behind him for the long tether on the zipper at the back of his wetsuit, yanks it down, and peels the wetsuit off his arms and chest. He lets it hang at his waist so his entire upper body is bare. A wave of intense heat flashes over me. I once read an article about spontaneous human combustion. It's an extremely rare phenomenon, but there are documented cases of people igniting out of the blue from no visible cause. Apparently, the fire starts within the body due to some bizarre combination of factors, and the person is consumed within minutes. There's even a Wikipedia page dedicated to the subject. A picture of the smoking pile of ash that used to be me will soon be featured on that Wikipedia page. Brody's body is, in a word, stunning. He's not bulky in the least, but he's beautifully muscled, with the definition of a long-distance runner, all sculpted planes and breathtaking angles, an incredibly poetic symmetry of form. The muscles in his biceps bulge as he raises his hands to rake them through his wet hair. Water runs in glistening rivulets down his chest and over the six-pack of his abs, channeling into the V below his waist that leads down to his pelvis. His shoulders are wide, his waist is narrow, his skin is a gorgeous golden hue, burnished from all the time he obviously spends in the sun. The tattoo that spans the breadth of his chest is a pair of angel's wings, flared wide, with something written in black ink just below his collarbone, in a language that looks like cursive hieroglyphics. I have no idea how long I stand there stupidly staring, but at some point I become aware that Brody is saying my name. What? No. I mean, yes, I'm listening. His eyes sparkle with amusement. How you doing there, Slick? Good, fine. I'm great. I toss my wet hair out of my face and attempt a nonchalant expression, like he didn't just catch me ogling him with drool running down my chin. You sure? You look a little flushed. He grins. I've never seen a man's smile look so goddamn smug. Turnabout is fair play, Kong. To tell the truth, Mr. Scott, I was just admiring your breasts. His brows shoot up. He glances down at himself and then back up at me. My breasts. Yes, they're quite spectacular. He shakes his head slowly, still grinning. Just out of curiosity, how many men's fragile egos have you crushed in your life? Because honestly, Slick, you're the worst at giving compliments. You're like the anti-compliment queen. Feeling cheeky and emboldened because I've narrowly escaped death by instantaneous combustion, I ask, does that mean you don't want me to touch them? He stares at me. Do you want to touch them? I think he was aiming for casual, but there's a telling edge to his voice. A rough little growl beneath the light-hearted delivery. It gives me a thrill. I would very much like to touch them, yes. I step closer. He doesn't move, but the pulse in the base of his neck quickens. I take another step closer, and another, and then we're standing only inches apart. Holding perfectly still, he gazes down at me. His green eyes are half-lidded. A drop of water glistens on his chin. I resist the urge to stand up on my toes and lick it off. Well, go ahead then, he says gruffly. Touch them. The pulse in his neck throbs. I reach out and touch his arm. The muscle in his biceps tenses. I slide my finger up to his shoulder. His nostrils flare. I trace the elegant line of his collarbone down to the hollow of his throat, where I let my finger rest for a moment on that wildly throbbing vein. He's holding so still. His eyes are so hot. I feel like we're on the cusp of nuclear fusion. I flatten my hand over the center of his chest. I feel the heat of his body, the clamor of his heart, and that crackle of electricity passing back and forth between us on a fast, repeating loop. With a crack in his voice, he says, "You're trembling." "So are you." "Those are shivers. I'm just cold from being wet. And the wind." I let my hand drift down his chest until I feel a small, peaked nub under my thumb. "Is that why your nipples are so hard?" He swallows. "Yep." As he struggles to remain still, I slowly circle his wet, hard nipple with my thumb. I whisper, "You must be very cold, Mr. Scott."
"Not everywhere."
It's a husky, needy rasp, and I love the sound of it. "No." My hand drifts lower. His breathing grows irregular. The muscles of his stomach contract under my touch. Just beneath his belly button, there's a fine down of hair. I stroke it, moving my finger languidly lower. He licks his lips. His entire body tenses. At his sides, his hands curl into fists. I ask, "Are you trying not to touch me?"
"Yes."
"Why?" He exhales a small, shaky breath.
"Because if I start, I won't be able to stop."
I tilt my head up, daring him with my eyes. My hand drifts lower. "And that's bad because..." He grabs my wrist and winds my arm behind my back. He pulls me against his chest, bunches a hand into my wet hair, and rasps,
"Because the first time I fuck you, Grace, it'll be the last time either of us fucks anyone else, and you're not ready for that yet."
To punctuate this shocking statement with an exclamation point, he angles my head toward his and kisses me, deeply, greedily, feeding on my mouth like he's starving and the key to his survival is the taste of my lips. I kiss him back just as hungrily. I can't get enough of this. Of him. I thread my fingers into his wet hair and pull his head down harder, greedy for every possessive little growl he's making in his throat, desperate for there to be no space between us. I want so badly to feel him inside me. I want to feel him everywhere.
"Señorita Grace!"
With a groan, Brody breaks off the kiss. He glares at Magda, standing at the open patio doors. She's holding my handbag in her hand. On my way into the party yesterday, I'd stashed it in a covered basket beneath a table in the entry. Magda holds out the bag.
"Esta es tuya?"
I answer in Spanish, "Yes, Magda, that's mine." She tells me the handbag has been ringing for an hour. Brody demands,
"English, devil women."
Apparently my phone's been ringing nonstop while we were out. Brody drops his forehead to mine. He chuckles,
"Saved by the bell."
I don't need saving, Kong. His smile is devastating.
"I wasn't talking about you, slick."
On cue, my phone, buried inside my handbag, begins to ring again. I sigh and pull away from Brody. As much as I'd like to continue this lovely moment, I'll need to deal with whoever is on the other end of that phone first. I take the bag from Magda, dig my phone out, and frown at the caller ID. It's the main office at my condo building. "Hello? Ms. Stanton?" It's the building manager, Linda Conley. She sounds panicked, but the woman is as high-strung as an overbred chihuahua, so I don't give it a second thought. "Hi, Linda. How are you?" When she exhales an anguished cry, a twinge of alarm zings through my stomach.
"Oh, thank God you're safe."
The twinge of alarm balloons into fear. "What are you talking about? What's happened?" Brody looks at me sharply. Magda turns around and wanders back inside the house. Linda breathes,
"Oh, Miss Stanton, Grace, there's been a terrible accident."
Everything inside me freezes. My blood stops circulating. My lungs refuse to contract. "Accident?" In a few long strides, Brody's at my side, his hand on my shoulder, his worried gaze on my face. Linda tells me the news, her words all running together.
Yes, there was a terrible accident. Mr. Leibovitz in Unit 1302, you know, he was on oxygen for his emphysema. He wasn't supposed to be smoking. All the doctors told him not to smoke, but he was a stubborn man. God forgive me for saying that. And you know how volatile those oxygen tanks are. What could he have been thinking? Everyone's in a panic. The fire department is here. So many paramedics and fire trucks. It's absolute pandemonium. And the mess. It's such a terrible mess. I don't know how long it will take to clean everything up. It's like 9/11 over here.
Linda, I shout. Tell me what happened.
There's a short pause. Then Linda says quietly, Mr. Leibovitz blew himself up. He lived in the unit directly above me. I close my eyes, already knowing what Linda is going to say next.
I'm so sorry, Grace, but your home is also destroyed in the explosion. There's nothing left. It's gone.
14. I can't move. I can't speak, even when Brody desperately begs me to talk to him, to tell him what happened, to tell him if I'm all right. I'm not all right. I'm homeless.
Grace, you're scaring me. Please, look at me.
The freeze abruptly thaws and all my bodily functions slam into high alert at once. I start to shake, sweat, and hyperventilate. Brody grips my arms.
Is it Kat? Chloe? Did someone get hurt?
I moisten my dry lips, swallow the bile rising in my throat. My condo, the man who lived above me had these big tanks of oxygen delivered every Saturday. He was a smoker. There was an explosion. My home is gone. My voice is surprisingly steady, but that's all I can manage to say in one breath.
Gone? What do you mean?
Destroyed, I say. Blown up. All my things. I have extra copies of my Bible at work. That's what I call the binder where I keep everything pertinent to my life in case I wake up one day a blank slate, so at least I have something left. I have paperwork left. Thank God I didn't own a pet, because it would be dead. If I hadn't slept at Brody's house last night, I'd be dead. Getting drunk saved my life. Cat saved my life. Brody's housewarming party saved my life. Brody saved my life. My mind is a soup of chaotic thoughts, swimming in stress hormones, churning with what-ifs. Only one thing's for certain. I've escaped death twice. That's two more times than most people get. Which gives the phrase, third time's a charm, a whole new meaning. That warped thought makes me laugh, only it sounds more like I'm choking. Brody's brow wrinkles with worry.
Let's go inside.
He gently guides me into the house. I'm dripping wet, doing my best impression of a leaf in gale-force winds. The brain floods the body with the hormone cortisol when under stress, and I'm pretty sure my brain just opened the floodgates and let loose its entire store.
Sit on the sofa.
I'll ruin the leather.
Fuck the leather. Sit.
I follow his command and sink to the sofa, immediately grateful I'm no longer standing, because the room has started to narrow and fade.
You're hyperventilating, Grace. Put your head between your knees and take deep breaths.
Dizzy, I bend over my legs, close my eyes, and suck air into my lungs. Brody puts his hands on my back and begins to rub circles, the movement slow and steadying. Steadying for my pulse, not for my mind. Maybe this is some kind of twisted sign. Maybe Marcus was wrong when he said the universe doesn't pick people out for misfortune. Maybe I'm one of those people who bad luck shadows all their lives. Maybe I'm cursed.
Give me your phone.
My knuckles are white around the phone I'm still clutching in my hand. Inhaling another shaky breath, I allow Brody to gently peel my fingers away and take it from me.
Magda, we need towels,
he calls out. She must have anticipated this request, because no sooner has he made it than she appears from around the corner of the living room with a bundle of bright beach towels in her arms. She takes one look at me hunched over the couch and exclaims,
Ay, mija, estás blanca como un fantasma.
You're as white as a ghost. Brody impatiently takes the towels from her, wraps one around my shoulders, and gently wipes the water from my face.
Just sit here quietly for a minute, Grace. I think you're in shock. Sit here until you catch your breath, then we'll get you out of this wetsuit and into dry clothes, and then we'll figure out what to do next. Okay?
Numb, I nod. Brody murmurs some instructions to Magda. I don't pay any attention to the words, only to the cadence of his voice, the strong, soothing tone of it. Flashbacks hit me with vivid intensity, memories of another time I sat white and numb in an unfamiliar place while a soothing male voice whispered words of instruction to others. The smell of antiseptic and death sharp in my nose. Brody's home is far more beautiful and comfortable than the emergency room at the hospital, but at the moment they feel like exactly the same thing.
15. Brody. Helpless isn't a feeling that sits well with me. Only once before have I ever felt anything close to this level of uselessness, when things were so fucked there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. Now, as it was then, my first instinct is to try to fix it. I hope I get better results this time. My firecracker sits still and pale on the sofa, all the life drained from her eyes. For a woman so vibrant, she looks unnervingly like a corpse. Magda, will you please make Grace a cup of tea?
Claro.
She hustles off into the kitchen, moving faster than I've ever seen her move in years. I gently kiss Grace's forehead, and then stride into the dining room where I can make a quiet phone call while still keeping her in my sight. Tense and pacing, I dial Nico's number from Grace's phone. He picks up with a sleepy,
Yo.
Keeping my voice low, I say, Nico, it's Brody.
Oh, hey, bro. I didn't recognize the number.
There's rustling and a murmur in the background. A female voice asks who it is. Shit, man, did I wake you guys up?
Yeah, you did, and it better be good, because my beautiful fucking wife's naked next to me in bed, and I've got some serious morning wood.
Jesus, dude. TMI. Nico chuckles. What time is it? You okay? No, listen. Turn on the local news for me.
The news? What's wrong?
I glance into the living room. Grace still sits unmoving on the sofa, staring blankly at the floor. Grace got a call from someone at her building saying her condo blew up.
Blew up? What the fuck?
What happened? Is he okay? In the background, Kat's voice is no longer sleepy. It's sharp and loud. Nico instructs her to turn on the television and find a news station. Kat says he can forget about his morning wood until he tells her what's going on. Nico laughs, Kat squeals, and then there's a suspicious silence.
Nico, for fuck's sake,
I hiss under my breath, trying not to let Grace hear me.
Sorry, bro, TV's coming on.
After a moment, the blare of a news station crackles over the line.
Local news, baby,
Nico says to Kat. Then to me,
your power out over there?
Just trying to avoid traumatizing Grace any more than she already is.
Wait, baby, stop on that one.
Nico is quiet a moment, and then he murmurs,
Holy shit.
In the background, Kat shouts, Oh my God, that's Grace's building. I demand, Tell me.
Looks like whoever called Grace was telling the truth. That fancy high-rise she lives in has a big hole right in the middle of it. Smoke's pouring out. Got fire trucks and paramedics all over the place. Looks like a bomb went off.
Fumbling noises, muffled cursing. Then a panicked Kat commandeers the phone.
Brody, is Grace okay? Is she still there?
Yes, she's here. Has she seen the news? It's a fucking disaster.
Kat, thank God she spent the night at your place. Put her on. I need to talk to her.
Kat, calm down.
Put her on the phone right now.
Wincing, I jerk the phone away from my head. When no more eardrum-piercing sounds emit from the speaker, I put the phone back to my ear. You being out of control emotionally isn't going to help her, Kat. The silence bristles. There's an aggravated snarl, like a bear rudely awoken from its winter hibernation, and then a sigh. Okay, you're right. I'm calm. Ish. Good. Thank you. What I need you to do is get some clothes together for her. Anything you or Chloe have that would fit, and some cosmetics. Hair stuff, girl stuff, I'll leave it to you. You know what she needs. Anything you don't have, I'll get from the store. I'll have a driver pick it up from your place later, or you guys can come over and... Wait a minute. She's staying with you? Yes. For how long? I glance over at Grace. A powerful feeling washes over me. It's a feeling I'm unfamiliar with, but one I want more than anything else I've ever wanted to dive deeper into. I say softly, I haven't asked her yet, but for as long as she wants. Hopefully forever. Kat's gasp tells me her emotions are about to spiral out of control again, even before she says with hysterical urgency, Are you guys a thing now? Oh, please, please tell me you're a thing. Kat, focus, clothes. Yes, okay, yes, I'll get the stuff together. I'll be over there as soon as I can. She stops speaking abruptly. After a moment, her voice lowered, she says, I've always liked you, Brody. I think you're a great guy, but if you ever hurt my girl, if you ever so much as make her frown, I'll rain down a shitstorm of such biblical proportions on your head, you won't know what hit you. I will rip off both your arms and beat you to death with them, literally. I can't help but smile at that. I know you will, Rocky. No, listen, she's not as tough as she seems. I know. She told me about her memory situation. I know what I'm getting into, and I'm 1,000% on board. She's not like anyone else I've met before. I've never felt like this before, and there's nothing on the face of this fucking earth I'd rather do than take care of her. I'll never hurt her, Kat, never. I swear on my mother's life. Kat's exhalation has a religious fervor to it. She sounds like she's making the sign of the cross over her chest. And now I'm going to hang up and go take care of our girl, okay? Kat sniffles. She says a choked, okay, and gives the phone to Nico. He barks, What did you just say to make my wife cry, asshole? I kinda told her, in so many words, that I'm falling in love with her girlfriend. After a brief silence, Nico chuckles. Yeah, that'd do it. In the living room, Magda hands Grace a mug of tea, sits down on the sofa beside her, and gives her a hug. I almost dropped the phone. Magda doesn't give hugs. She gives tongue lashings. She gives the evil eye. She does not give hugs. Unless I'm hallucinating, which is a definite possibility. I gotta go, Nico. Yep, let us know if you need anything. Will do. Thanks, man. I hang up and head straight back to Grace. The moment I stop in front of the sofa, Magda launches into an unintelligible rant accompanied by a lot of choppy hand gestures that seems to indicate I'm doing everything wrong and am not competent enough to deal with a soaking wet, distraught woman. Magda, I have no idea what you just said, but I need to talk to... Magda throws up a hand. She turns to Grace and very gently says something to her in Spanish. Grace takes a sip of her tea. She whispers, Thank you, Magda. That's very kind. Magda pats her back, nodding. Then she says something else in Spanish to Grace. Oh, no, I... Grace glances up at me, then quickly looks away. I couldn't impose like that. I'll get a hotel. My insurance will cover it. Yes, I interrupt, guessing what Magda has said from the context of Grace's denial. You should stay here. We want you to. I want you to. Magda throws me a killer glare that's supposed to shut me up, but doesn't, because I've been on the receiving end of so many of them, I'm immune. I sink to a knee in front of Grace and take her hand. If you don't feel comfortable staying with me in the main house because we're not, because we haven't... Grace's brows lift. Magda growls at me. I blurt, The guest house is 3,000 square feet. It has its own pool and its own private entrance. You could come and go anytime. It would be like your own place. Shaking her head, Magda exhales through her nose and looks at the ceiling. Ignoring her, I squeeze Grace's hand. At least for tonight. Or a few days, until you get settled with whatever other arrangements you need to make. You can stay however long you need. Grace drops her gaze to our hands. She chews her lower lip for a moment, thinking. Please. She doesn't say anything. I promise I won't be weird or anything. Grace looks up at me with a furrow between her brows. I mean, more weird. Finally, she cracks a smile. Is that a yes? I press, excited. Magda says, "Ech, patético." Then she explains something to Grace in Spanish. Grace listens. She takes another sip of her tea. When Magda stops speaking, Grace looks at her for a long while and then at me. She says, "Whatever you're paying her, this woman deserves a raise." Then she and Magda stand. So do I, too. Sounding more steady, Grace says, "I'd like to take a shower and get into some dry clothes." "Yes, of course. Take a shower and I'll find you something of mine to wear. Sweats and a t-shirt, okay?" Grace nods. "I called Kat. She's going to bring some clothes over for you later. I'll get the guest house ready and then..." I trail off into silence because I don't know what's supposed to happen then. But Grace lives up to her name because she gives me a sweet, soft smile and kisses me on the cheek. "And then we'll talk." My heart starts pounding. "Yes, then we'll talk." Is it wrong that I'm hoping she meant to say a different four-letter word that ends with a K? Yes, it's wrong. I'm a perv, I know. I can't help myself. I've been lusting after this woman for so long now, the inside of my brain is wallpapered with images of her naked body. Then it hits me that what Grace needs right now isn't another dude waving his dick in her face. What she needs, more than anything, is a friend. If I really want to do right by her, I need to be her friend, not the guy who's trying his hardest to get into her panties when she's most vulnerable, which means I need to back off. Damn, it's inconvenient having a conscience. She turns and walks away, down the hall toward the guest bedroom she spent the night in. I watch her go, Magda by my side. When Grace closes the bedroom door behind her, Magda looks up at me. She says in English, "You're welcome. Don't fuck it up." Exasperated, I throw my hands in the air. "Magda, why have I never heard you speak English before today?" She shrugs. Then, with a gleam in her dark eyes, she answers in Spanish. I glare at her. "You've got to be kidding me." She smiles, pats me on the arm, and then turns and walks away. I call out, "If I didn't love you so much, you'd be so fired right now." I hear her cackling long after she's disappeared from sight. 16. I'm lying on my back in my bed, staring at the ceiling while I listen to my mom gripe about my younger brother, Branson, who still lives at home, when Grace walks in. Her face is bare. Her damp hair is combed straight. She's wearing my gray sweatpants and Neil Diamond t-shirt I left out for her on the bed in the guest bedroom while she was taking a shower. Seeing me on the phone, she hesitates in the doorway, her hand resting on the frame. Neil's face has two perky points jutting out from the middle of it. Trying to nonchalantly adjust my thickening cock beneath the sweats I'm wearing, I sit up. Mom, I have to go. Go? We've been on the phone for 2 minutes. I haven't talked to you since last week. I have company. My mother's silences are so rich and nuanced, they're like symphonies. This one has a top note of curiosity and a healthy baseline of irritation, because there's nothing more she loves to do than complain to me about my brother. Luckily, I only have to hear about it once a week. From your tone, Brody, I take it this company is of the female variety? I can't look away from Grace. It's like my eyeballs are super glued to her. A horde of zombies could crash through the window and start to eat my face off, and I'd still be sitting here staring at her, stunning as a Caravaggio painting in my doorway, looking at me with her lower lip pulled up between her teeth and her gray eyes soft and needy. Be a friend, be a friend, be a friend, you fucking selfish asshole. Yes, I tell my mother, very. She laughs. Oh, my. That sounds serious. It is. After another deafening pause, she says sternly, I expect you to be responsible and wear condoms, son. Christ, Mom, I'm 29 years old, not 12. Also, gross. Condoms aren't gross, honey. They're practical. You telling me to wear one is gross. This conversation is gross. Well, I've seen pictures in my entertainment magazines of some of those ladies you date, and quite frankly, I'm surprised you haven't yet been diagnosed with some incurable venereal disease. She gasps. Or have you, and you're just not telling me? I'm hanging up on you now. On a related topic, the pill isn't always 100% reliable, you know. Oh my God, dude. I am not a dude. I'm your mother, and I'm ready for more grandchildren, Brody, but not by some floozy named Iguana Azalea or Bone China or Rainbow Trout or whatever. We are not the Kardashians. Goodbye, mother. One final thought. Antiviral lubricant is very effective at killing a wide variety of... I hang up before she can succeed in making me puke. Grace stares at me with one elegant brow cocked. That sounded interesting. You really don't want to know. That was your mom? Yeah. Did I hear the word condom mentioned? I drop my head into my hands and groan. Grace walks over to the bed and perches on the edge of the mattress. I open two fingers and peek at her. She asks, "So you're close with your family?" Unfortunately. When Grace blinks, I feel like the hugest asshole in the world. She doesn't have a family, and here I am being completely insensitive. I backtrack as fast as I can. No, I mean, yes, we're close. That came out wrong. I love them, and I'm grateful to have them. It's okay, she says, smiling. I know what you meant. I blow out a relieved breath. Sorry, I'm an idiot. She looks down and thoughtfully picks at the comforter. I guess one of the girls told you about my parents, huh? Oh, shit. Could I fuck this up any more perfectly? I try to be as diplomatic as I can while still being honest. Only because I kind of forced the subject, and they wouldn't say much. They love you, you know. I don't think I've ever seen closer friends than you three. She nods. Yeah. Her voice grows softer. I would never have made it this far without them. There are so many questions I want to ask her, so many things I want to say, but the timing is fucked. Anything I say would probably only make things worse, so I end up nodding mutely. She saves us from the awkward silence when she says, I made a bunch of calls. Some of my friends in the building, my insurance company, a colleague at work who covers for me when I'm out of the office. I'll have to reschedule all my clients for the next few weeks. I doubt I'll be helpful to anyone right now. Then I made the mistake of turning on the television to watch the news. The waver in her voice stirs that protective instinct in me again. I touch her arm. She looks up at me with big eyes. She whispers, Would it be okay if... Could I maybe ask for a hug? Without thinking, I say, You could ask for anything you want and I'd give it to you. We stare at each other for a beat, electricity sparking between us, and then she smiles. In that case, I'd like to request a tropical island.
An island? Jeez, go big or go home, Slick.
Just one of the little ones in the South Pacific, maybe? Come on, you're rich. Grinning, I take her by the arm, gently pull her next to me, lie back, and tuck her under my arm, so we're lying side by side. She rests her cheek on my shoulder, slides one bare foot under my calf, and bends her other leg so it's resting over my thigh. She spreads her hand flat on my chest and sighs in contentment. It feels incredible. We're a perfect fit. Even our breathing seems to fit, synchronizing so our chests rise and fall in the same slow rhythm. Now, if only my dick would behave, everything would just be peachy. Grace clears her throat. Should I move? No, ignore it. The thing has a one-track mind. We're quiet for a minute, just breathing. Then, with a smile in her voice, she says, Are you doing that on purpose? Doing what? That twitching. I cover my red face with my hand. You're supposed to be ignoring it. Her body shakes with suppressed laughter. How could I ignore it, Brody? It has its own heartbeat. Ugh, sorry. It's not normally so obnoxious. Yeah, right. I'm not kidding. Being around you gives me perma-wood. I feel like a teenager again. Or a dirty old man. Who you call an old woman? I'm not the one on this bed who's on the dark side of 30. She chuckles. Oh, that's right. I'm robbing the cradle. Excuse me, 29 is hardly in a cradle. God, between you and my mother, she replies in a baby voice. Does Widow Brody need his baba? I exhale slowly, smothering the violent urge to flip her onto her back and show her just how much of a baba I need. You're lucky I'm trying to be your friend right now, Slick. That's all I'm going to say. My friend? That sounds ominous. When I don't answer, she muses. I've never had a male friend. Exactly. I didn't mean it as a good thing. She props herself up on her elbow and looks down at me. Is this your way of telling me you don't want to have sex with me? I want to have sex with you more than I want to survive to see another day. More than I want Ben Affleck to stop making superhero movies. More than I want flying cars to be a real thing. That's not the point. Her forehead wrinkles. What is the point? My dick is throbbing so hard I actually don't know what the point is. I have to use all my willpower to focus and try to get some blood back up into my brain. I think the point is that... She waits, her brows lifted. The point is that I already told you the point. I don't want to fuck you. Yet. I mean, I do, desperately, but I won't. Her brows return to their normal position. Okay, that sounded ominous. I'm trying to decide if that's romantic or just dumb. Gee, thanks. She lays her head on my chest again and snuggles up against me. Then she starts to toy with the hem of my t-shirt. It seems absent-minded, the way her fingers accidentally skim my bare skin just above the waistband of my sweatpants, but this is Grace Stanton we're dealing with here. Nothing she does is by chance. When she draws a series of slow circles around my belly button, I warn gruffly, Grace. I know, she whispers. I felt that too. Do you think he'll chew a hole clean through your sweats? I can't believe we're talking about my cock like he's an inmate about to make a prison break. She slides her thumb under the elastic of my sweats, and my dick bucks like a rodeo bull right before the bell sounds and the gate flies open. I feel her smile on my chest. It's a good analogy, though. She presses a kiss to the side of my neck, just under my ear. A bolt of lust surges through me, so strong it steals my breath. Grace says, Whoa, even I felt that. I wrap my hand carefully around her wrist. My voice comes out raw. It would be probably the most selfish thing I could do to fuck you right now. I'd feel like a total asshole after. We're not going there. The tone of my voice or my hand restraining her from moving does something to her, because a little tremor runs through her body and her breathing goes all ragged. She whispers, What if I told you it's exactly what I need, though? Something in her voice brings back Chloe's words like cold water splashed on my face. Grace isn't the girl who wants the roses and the love poems and the happily ever after. She told me that the day Abby was born, the same time she told me Grace's parents had been killed in an accident. But now I have another piece of the puzzle, because I know the reason why Grace doesn't want the happily ever after. Why she's chosen to live every day as if it's her last. She doesn't think she'll remember any of it. And she doesn't want to hurt anyone her memories might leave behind. I roll her onto her back, take both her wrists in my hands, and press them into the pillow so she can't randomly fondle me and weaken my resolve. We're chest to chest, nose to nose, crotch to crotch, staring into each other's eyes, breathing each other's breath. If there's anything more perfect in this world, I've never found it. I don't want this to be like anything else either one of us has had, I say. I don't want it to be casual. I don't want it to be only about the sex. I don't want to jump into a physical relationship before we get to know each other. I want it to be special because it is special. With you, I feel this weird... There's a connection. I don't know why, there just is, and I don't want to fuck it up. I meant what I said outside. Whatever this is between us, it's real, Grace. It's fucking real, and I'm going to respect it by giving it a little room to breathe and grow before I go sticking my dick in it. Grace's eyes are wide and unblinking. I can't tell if she's horrified, surprised, or about to bolt from the room and never look back. She says flatly, "Oh, my God, you're totally in love with me." It's only after the mischievous smile flits over her face, there, then instantly gone, that I realize she's messing with me. Naturally, I can't let that stand. With a straight face, I answer, "How could I be in love with you? You're probably the most hideous woman alive." Her lips twitch. She's trying not to laugh. "It's not funny, Grace. You're revolting. I don't know how you don't get arrested for public indecency when you leave the house. It's like you fell out of the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down." "At least I don't have a sex-obsessed gherkin living in my pants." I snort. "Don't you?" "Oh, yeah, you might have me there. Let me try again." "Sure, have at it, witch face." "I might have a witch face, but at least I'm not a mama's boy." I grin. Smart chicks are the best. And smart-mouthed chicks. If I were Kinji, this is where I'd heave a dreamy sigh and faint into a pile of lavender-scented pillows. Instead, I ask, "If I throw a stick, will you chase it?" Grace laughs. "Oh, I get it, because I'm a dog. That's called a metaphor. I'd explain it to you, but I don't have any crayons." I press a soft kiss to her lips and whisper, "The last time I saw a face like yours, I fed it a banana." She giggles. "Excuse me, Kong, we've already established that you're the ape in this relationship." I'm trying really hard not to laugh. "I love what you've done with your nostril hair. How do you braid it like that?" "Hey!" She playfully kicks me in the shin. "Sorry, have I gone too far? Nose hair is where you draw the line?" We grin at each other, until finally she sighs. "Okay. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to convince you to have sex with me, which, by the way, has never happened to me before, so..." "So feel special?" "Exactly." I roll to my back, taking her along and settle her on top of me. Funny, but somehow that doesn't make me feel so special. Gazing down at me with her hair curtained around her face, Grace smiles. "It should, Kong, because if it were anyone else but you, I'd already have kicked his ass to the curb." "You wanton little trollop." I cup her face and kiss her again, deeper this time, exploring her sweet mouth with my tongue. Against my lips, she says breathlessly, "You're wanton little trollop." My heart stalls out before taking off like a rocket. "I'm gonna hold you to that, slick." This time the kiss is serious. It lasts for what feels like forever. Her body is a soft, delicious weight on top of mine. She smells like shampoo and clean skin. An animalistic urge to tear off all her clothes, bury my face between her thighs and find out what her pussy tastes like, rips through me. She flexes her hips, rubbing her pelvis against my stiff cock, and I groan. "I'm sorry, that was an accident." I growl, "You're a shitty liar." I have her breasts in my hands. How did that happen? They're full and heavy in my palms, a lush weight covered by the barest layer of soft cotton. I rub my thumbs over the top peaks of her nipples, and she gasps. Acting purely on instinct, I lift my head and suck on one rigid nub right through the t-shirt. Her moan is so erotic, I almost come in my pants. I bite down gently and am rewarded by another moan, this one even more sensual than the last. Shuddering, she arches into my hands, into my mouth. Her hair spills down her back. "More," she begs, rocking on top of me. "Brody, more." "Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck." "Grace, please, just a little bit more." There's no man on earth who could resist the beautiful woman that he's completely insane over, begging him to keep playing with her tits. If there is, he's a better man than I am. I slide my hands under her shirt. Her skin is hot, silky. My hands almost span her waist. Moving slowly, loving the sound of her ragged breathing, the hazy, lust-filled look in her eyes, I move my hands up, tracing her skin with the tips of my fingers. When I cup her breasts, squeezing the fullness of the globes, she groans. I pinch both her nipples and her eyes slide shut.
"Your mouth," she rasps. "I need your mouth."
I'm starting to sweat. My heart thinks it's a jackhammer. I have no idea how much longer I'll be able to keep up this little game before I have to go jerk off in the shower, but I decide to find out. I push up her t-shirt and latch onto a rigid pink nipple with my mouth. She moans my name. I'm a warrior. I'm a king. I'm a fucking god. I go back and forth between her breasts, sucking and gently biting, stroking and pinching the nipple that isn't in my mouth. Her tits are gorgeous, rosy and flushed, incredibly sensitive to my every touch. My dick is a steel pipe, a throbbing steel pipe. Grace rocks faster against it, dry-humping me as I fondle her. Against her breast, I whisper, "Are you trying to get yourself off, sweetheart?" Her only answer is a low, ragged moan. I know a yes when I hear one. I flip her to her back, straddle her, drag the t-shirt over her head and up her arms, and tie it in a knot around her wrists. Blinking and breathless, she stares up at me. Her cheeks are pink. Her lips are parted. Her hair is damp and wild all over the pillow. She's the single most gorgeous thing I've ever seen. "Did you just handcuff me with your shirt?" Breathing hard, I answer, "Fuck yes, I did." "Can you come just from having your nipples sucked?" She whispers, I don't know. I've never tried it." My grin is savage. Until now. And for the record, this isn't sex. This is just foreplay. I lower my head and begin the experiment.
17. Grace. With every pull of Brody's lips on my nipples, a wave of hot, pure pleasure pulses between my legs. I writhe and moan beneath him, desperate for more. "God, the sound she makes," he mutters to himself before diving back in for another mouthful of flesh. He's straddling me, his legs on either side of my hips, so I have nothing to rub against, nothing but the pressure of my thighs pressed together to answer the growing ache between my legs. It's not enough. I need more. I need him. "Take out your cock," I whisper breathlessly. He glances up at me, his cheeks flushed, fire in his eyes. His big hands cup both my breasts. His skin is golden against my paleness. His lips are wet around one hard nipple. He sucks it so strongly his cheeks hollow. I arch and moan again. The sound is broken. "Please, just let me see it."
"I'm not gonna fuck you, Grace."
Why does hearing him say those words in that gruff, almost angry tone drive me right to the edge of sanity? "I need to see it. I need to see how hard you are for me." I pant, rocking my hips like the wanton little trollop he teasingly called me. Against his sweats, his cock bobs, and I whimper. He moves to my other nipple. Looking up at me, he slowly circles his tongue around it and then takes it between his teeth. When he gently bites down, my lids slide shut. I groan, arching into his mouth.
"Tell me how wet your pussy is,"
he demands, squeezing my breasts. "Soaking. I'm soaked. I need you to touch me. I need your fingers. Please, Brody. I need your tongue."
"You have my tongue, sweetheart,"
he whispers. He bites me beneath my nipple in the full part of my breast. I gasp in pleasure. Then he licks the sting away, and I start to plead with him again.
"Between my legs. If you won't give me your cock, I need your tongue between my legs. Oh, God, please."
I break off with a cry as he pinches both my nipples. Heat pulses in my core.
"You want me to lick your pussy, Grace? You need my tongue on your sweet little clit?"
When I open my eyes, there's a different Brody on top of me, staring down with startling intensity at my face. This isn't the boyish Brody. the adorable surfer with the cocky swagger and the even cockier grin. This is Brody the man, with a wolf's hungry eyes and dangerous growl, ready to pounce and tear me to shreds. My voice comes out small. Yes, please. That low animal.